done such a great job, and thank you for the choir. It always brings a special time to the feast. I remember the feast as a teenager coming into the church and growing up in the church, and always remember the festival choirs with some specialness in the heart when I hear them sing. First of all, I'd like to express appreciation to the Anastasis and the Italian Brethren for hosting the feast here. This is my wife's and I's first time. And I have a job where I have an events team that coordinates various events. And I know the work and effort to make sure everything runs without a hitch, it's a lot. And so thank you very much to the Anastasis and the Italian Brethren. This has just been an incredible time so far here. And I also want to mention how inspiring the song service was. We sat yesterday in between English and Italian singers, and it was really inspiring to hear the blending of the languages. You know, it reminds us that we come from diverse backgrounds. And here we have diverse languages, but yet we come together before God as one. And it just inspired me yesterday just to be a part of that and hear both languages. When I say the word time, what comes to mind? Now, probably the first thing we are thinking of, because we're at the feast here, is the future, the time ahead, the time these days predict, the millennium, the return of Jesus Christ, the lion and the lamb together. However, after a little bit of time, after that thought passes, we might be thinking about what we're currently facing at this time. Maybe the word serves as a reminder of what we have to do or what we're going to do. Something this evening, maybe something tomorrow, maybe something this week, maybe some things when we return home from the feast that we need to take care of when we get back. For some, it may conjure thoughts of the past. Maybe the question comes to mind when we think of time, where did the time go? And I believe as we get older, that question does become more relevant. For others, when we consider the use of time in our lives, it may be a reminder that we really do need to get more organized. We just can't get things done on time. For others, it may be a feeling there just isn't enough time. We can all be challenged by time, the constraints of time. Maybe not so much here at the feast when we're at a resort and it's a little more leisurely, but when we return home, we can be challenged by time. We may find ourselves running around nonstop around the clock, dividing our energies amongst a host of things, checking in with our smartphones, making sure we're keeping up with all our messages, scrambling for more time. And a day just seems that once we get up to once we go to sleep, it's just a blur of activity. And this is true whether we're a student, a parent, a grandparent, an employee, a business owner, a retiree. We might find ourselves in a situation where there just isn't enough time in a day. Things don't get done. Thus, we press ourselves to make better use of our time. And in search for more time in the day, what do? Well, we tend to rush around everywhere, mainly out of habit, trying to get to our destination a little bit quicker and getting annoyed when the car in front of us does not move fast enough. Even when there's no problem or an emergency that requires our immediate attention. And we find ourselves maybe sometimes waiting in line to get, we want to get something done. Well, watch out. We fidget, we sigh, we look at our cell phones, we mumble under our breath how incompetent people are. In our immediate future-focused mentality, the need, the perceived need to get things done quickly, move quickly, and once we are there, get it done quickly, it's not just a one-time experience. They become deeply embedded into Western culture, and especially American culture. Modern society celebrates the overachievers and the ambitious. There's a credo that says time is money, and that is celebrated. A culture with growth and development and progress is expected to happen very quickly. And I know I work at a medical school where we do a lot of research, and you have to be quick with research, and you have to move and move and move all the time to get the grants and to try to find a solution to mankind's problems. Technology, once expected to give us more time, actually seems to take time away from us, doesn't it? The proliferation of the internet has created a wealth of information for us just at our fingertips. And it opens up various countless opportunities and gives us millions of choices where we can evaluate and consider things on a daily basis. Is there really ever enough time to read all the posts on Facebook or check all the Instagram updates? And don't we get irritated when our smartphone gets that little circle of death when we're trying to get some information? Doesn't that just annoy us? However, the ability to multitask is an essential skill that's very much in demand in today's world. A study in the Journal of Experimental Psychology, Human Perception and Performance, indicates that multitasking may actually be less efficient, especially for complicated or unfamiliar tasks, because it takes time, an extra time to shift the mental gears every time a person switches between two tasks. In reality, multitasking creates a distraction. How many times, we're not looking for hands, have you talked to someone engaged in their smartphone and they did not even hear a word you've said? Their heads popped up with the confusing, what? Because they've been so engrossed in the information on their phone. And the emotional impact of technology is great too. The impatience and the short temper sometimes we experience as a result of being bombarded with information may cause us stress and take a toll on us physically and mentally. I would like to read from an article from Psychology Today entitled, "Are You Too Busy to Be Yourself?" from Rod Judkins, January 20th, 2015. People convince themselves they are important and worthwhile because they are busy. It's a modern problem. Everyone is rushing around, but few are doing what they really want to. Many people spend their lives hurrying about in pleasing their boss or family, but rarely themselves. They spend their lives racing, but however fast they go, they never seem to achieve anything. It's a 21st century problem, or is it? So it is. We are not given a short life, but we make it short, and we're not ill-supplied, but wasteful of it. The article goes on. Life is long if you know how to use it, wrote Roman philosopher Seneca in his book On the Shortness of Life, written 2,000 years ago. It could have been written yesterday. In modern life, busyness is a distraction from living. Many dutifully fulfill their obligations, but fail to do anything worthwhile. Ancient Romans suffered exactly the same problem. Seneca berates us for failing to see time as a valuable commodity. We value objects, but squander our most valuable possession. He could be talking about contemporary life when he says, "For suppose you think a man had a long voyage who had been caught in a raging storm as he left harbor and carried hither and thither and driven around in a circle by the rage of the opposing winds? He did not have a long voyage, just a long tossing around." The article references that time is our most valuable possession, but do we view it that way? When we were young, it seemed that time was endless. Summer break from elementary school seemed to take so long. In fact, it seemed to go, what I remember, too slow. Like the time it took to reach the 18th or the 21st birthday. We viewed other things more valuable than time. But as we age, it does seem, doesn't it, that time goes by more quickly, too quickly. As a result from us over time, time becomes more valuable in our eyes. As time has gone on for myself and my wife, the goals of making money to buy a home, to have a family and take care of them, saving for retirement, which are important and still are, has taken a lesser significance in compared to how we want to make the most use of the time we have left. A quote from physicianphilosopher.com is all too true. Time is money, but money can't buy time. Time is not only a valuable possession, but a unique one as well. We can't save it, retrieve it, relive it, stretch it, borrow it, loan it, stop it, or store it. We can only use it or we lose it. We can't call a timeout on time, on the game of life. Time moves on. There are many inequities in this world, but one thing we all have in common, young, old, wherever we're from, there's one thing we all have in common, and that's the same amount of time we have in a day. We all have 24 hours allotted to us, whether we're rich or poor, old or young. And time is a resource, but it's non-renewable. Once it's gone, it's gone. So it's up to us individually with what we do with it. Since we are products of a fast-paced society, some may tend to think and act as they've been shortchanged when it comes to life. It's not uncommon to hear comments like, "I just don't have the time to do what I need to do," or "I just don't know where the time goes." How many of us have voiced that over time? In society today, people feel pushed for more time. There is a feeling that there simply isn't enough time, enough hours, enough minutes in a day. We can see this push with regard to the words we regularly hear used for time, such as urgent, priority, or pressing. With all our modern conveniences, with all our technological advances, we should have more leisure time than any time in history. But the opposite is unfortunately the case. If we look around and we take an honest look, people appear to be weary, tired, exhausted, and at times even defeated. So why do people find themselves not having enough time? I'd like us to consider four possibilities. First, it could be that people, and when I talk about people, I'm including ourselves, they're pressed for time because they have a faulty view of values. In our society, the jam-packed schedule, the incredible hours, the heavy demands are supposed to show how successful or important a person is. And one can erringly evaluate others' success by one's level of activity in life. In other words, the busier the person is, the more important they must be, or the more successful they are, right? Young people, is this how life is viewed? Thus, we find ourselves emulating that behavior. We want to feel important. We want to feel valued. And we want to be viewed as being successful. The second possibility that people feel they do not have enough time is that a person can be involved in many things as a cover-up for neglecting important responsibilities. Running around and doing all sorts of ancillary activities is sometimes an excuse to avoid the more important or difficult responsibilities we all face. We can justify our behavior, our procrastination, our avoidance of getting things done that we really need to take care of because we're just too busy to get to it. A third possibility that people do not seem to have enough time is the quest for materialism. People with distorted priorities are never really satisfied. Enough is never enough. They try to achieve that elusive goal of having more, only to find out that goal is never achieved because there's always a need for more in life. As a result, they pursue the accumulation of more and more things, never seeming to have time for anything else. And a fourth possibility that people may find themselves feeling that they do not have enough time is due to the fact they have an overemphasis of what others think about them. Proverbs 29, verse 25 mentions the fear of man. People in this situation go around trying to keep others happy, avoiding disapproval from parents, from spouses, from children, from friends, from coworkers, at the expense of exhausting themselves. They make sure they're taking care of others while neglecting their own responsibilities. Why? Because they don't have the time. In our performance-oriented society, activity that produces some kind of result is placed at a premium and is viewed from that perspective. And unless that activity shows some form of obvious yield, the time viewed can be viewed as wasted. The problem facing society today is not the amount of time one has. It's how time is viewed and how life itself is viewed. In the Bible, there are two particular verses that I would like to review that discusses the use of time for those who are called today. But before I go to those two verses, some may have the impression that I'm going to give a message that will focus on scriptures on how we fall short of our use of time. I'm going to give a stoic lifestyle message that God is some sort of wet blanket when it comes to having fun or laughing. And those activities, laughing and fun, can be viewed as shallow and immature at best and sinful at worst. One can have spiritual joy that is biblical, but to be happy and laugh, well, maybe not so much. that maybe if we spend the time living the life of self-imposed perfection, praying all the time, doing the right thing, acting all quiet and holy and serious, that God will be pleased with our actions. The concept of happiness and pleasure and holiness are not mutually exclusive. Time is a resource that every one of us has at our disposal and should not be wasted. And scriptures address this issue. But is play, leisure, rest, smelling the roses a waste of time? Is listening to the waves of the ocean beating on the shore as we have outside our hotel a waste of time? Is listening to the wind through the trees, enjoying music, watching a majestic sunset, celebrating at a wedding, getting together with friends or family, or having a good laugh a waste of time? Well, let's look at a few scriptures. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 18. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 18. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 18, and I will read from the New Living Translation. I find that that translation for some scriptures just makes it a little more clear. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 18, but please feel free to follow along. Even so, I have noticed one thing at least that is good. It is good for people to eat, drink, and enjoy their work under the sun during the short life God has given them, and to accept their lot in life. And it is good to receive wealth from God and the good health to enjoy it. To enjoy your work and accept your lot in life, this is indeed a gift from God. God keeps such people so busy enjoying life that they take no time to brood over the past. Psalms 128. Verse 1. Psalm 128, verse 1. Psalm 128, verse 1. It states in Psalms 128, verse 1, "Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you eat the labor of your hands, you shall be happy, and it shall be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine in the very heart of your house, and your children like olive plants all around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord." Let's go back to Ecclesiastes. This time in chapter 3, Ecclesiastes 3. Ecclesiastes 3. And again, I'd like to read from the New Living Translation. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 9. It states in Ecclesiastes 3, verse 9, "What do people really get for all of their hard work? I have seen the burden God has placed on us all, yet God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He has planted eternity in the human heart, but even so, people cannot see the whole scope of God's work from beginning to end. So I concluded," verse 12, "there is nothing better than to be happy and enjoy ourselves as long as we can." Verse 13, "And people should eat and drink and enjoy the fruits of their labor, for these are gifts from God." No doubt that Jesus Christ, when he was on this earth, enjoyed what life had to offer. When we look at the first miracle, what was it? It was at the wedding, where he turned water into wine to keep the wedding celebration going. People went to Jesus Children went to Jesus. He was approachable. I don't think he was walking around somberly all the time. I would imagine he had some good laughs along the way. By the way, laughter was something that was created in man by God. We are made in his image. But I'm not saying we go to the other extreme either. We haven't been placed on this earth to be just entertained. Life is not all about taking pleasures. 2 Timothy 3:4 talks about the end times. There's no need to turn there. Where it says that men will be lover of pleasure more than lovers of God. A love of pleasure can result in a misplaced focus. We were created to enjoy the blessings of this life, to delight in them. But that enjoyment is to be God-centric. Psalm 37:4, no need to turn there, states that we are to delight in the Lord, and he will give us our heart's desires. Our heart's desires are fulfilled as a result of delighting God first. So far, in this message, we have discussed time, our society's fast pace, never-ending, never-having-enough-time culture, that in our society, people find themselves never seeming to have enough time because of misplaced priorities. And when we get down to it, the challenge of time is not the amount of time we have all been given, but the view of time and the view of life itself. We've also reviewed that time is a valuable possession. It's a resource that is not renewable. Once it is gone, it is gone. Finally, time is a resource that's meant to be enjoyed. It's not all about conquering. It's not all about achieving and accumulating at the expense of all else. With this as background, I would like to go on to the subject of the message today. It took me a little while, but we're getting there. As I mentioned earlier, today's message will focus on two particular scriptures about time and our walk in this way. And I want to particularly focus on a particular phrase that's found in each of these two passages that relate to use of time and our view and use of it. The phrase, which is also the title of this message, is redeeming the time. Redeeming the time. But before I go to those two scriptures, I thought it'd be good to review the concept of time from a biblical standpoint, from the book of Ecclesiastes. If we turn to Ecclesiastes 3. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 1. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 1. It states in Ecclesiastes 3, verse 1, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. Now, I can't help personally thinking about the 1960s folk rock band The Byrds, and the song, Turn, 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 and you're probably humming it along in my mind as I read this. BibleStudyTools.com makes the following commentary on this verse that sets the stage what we'll be reading in the next seven verses. It states, man has his appointed cycle of seasons and vicissitudes as the sun and the wind and the water, purpose as there's a fixed season in God's purpose. For example, he fixed the time for man to be born and to die. So there's a lawful time for man to carry out his purposes and inclinations. God does not condemn, but approves of the use of earthly blessings. It's the abuse that he condemns, making them the chief end. The earth without human desires, love, taste, joy, sorrow would be a dreary waste without water. But on the other hand, misplacing and excess of them as a flood need control. Reason and revelation are given to control them. Now on to verse 2. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones. A time to gather stones. A time to embrace. A time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. Solomon is teaching that all the events and activities of life, as illustrated in verses 2 through 8, have their proper time. Life is meant to be a series of experiences, some joyful, but also some sad. Life was never meant to be a panacea, but it was never also meant to be a life of unending burdens. It has its ups and it has its downs. The Hebrew word for season used in these set of scriptures is zaman, which means a point of time, appointed time and season. The word for Hebrew word for time, eth, is an event and an opportunity. Within these verses, we can see that some of these events only occur once in life, while others occur repeatedly. The important thing for all of us to recognize, there are times for various events in life, whether there are opportunities or responsibilities that we bear, or at times the trials that we face. And there are situations that we are to take the time to do what's needed, but also there is a time to enjoy life's blessings. Our time on earth is not only to be that of downs. There are times when we will have ups. There will be times of incredible joy, but there will also be times of incredible heartache. From the time of birth to the time of death, this is what physical life is all about. Let us now examine the two scriptures that discuss redeeming the time. Ephesians 5, verse 15. Ephesians 5, verse 15. Ephesians 5, verse 15. States in Ephesians 5, verse 15, and we'll read through verse 17. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. In verses 15 and 16, Paul uses three Greek words or phrases that discuss the use of time we have in this life. First, walk circumspectly. Two, redeem. And three, the word time. First, I want to look at the words walk circumspectly. Most translations render this as be careful or walk carefully. The word walk was translated from the Greek word peripateo, which means to live or to be occupied with. Next, the word circumspectly is translated from the Greek word akrobos, which means diligently, perfectly, or circumspectly. The idea is that we, of members of God's family, are commanded to continually take heed, be alert, be vigilant, and discern God's Spirit. The next word to examine is the word redeem. The word redeem is the Greek word exargarazo, which literally means to buy out of the marketplace. This picture of a merchant who diligently sees to buy up the best bargains in the marketplace. Then the third word to examine is time. Kairos in the Greek refers to a fixed and definite point of time during which something can be accomplished that cannot be accomplished after the time has passed. It speaks of opportunities and events that come our way. Kairos is different from the other word, Greek word for time, which is chronos. A sequence of moments was expressed as chronos, emphasizing the duration of time. An appointed time is expressed in the word kairos, with no regard to length of time. Kairos is not clock time, but it's better referred to as opportunities. It's the idea of taking advantage of the opportunities that are presented at the right time. In other words, the word time in verse 16 calls for us to make it our lifestyle, make it our walk, to be alert of opportunities in the marketplace, our interactions with the world around us. This includes our families, our friends, our coworkers, or people we just happen to interact with. We're here, whether at the hotel or we go out on tours, to take advantage of the marketplace, to take advantage of the time. As a result, we begin to view people and circumstances not as just encounters, but as opportunities to make an impact as a light, opportunities to share the love of God in us, opportunities to share the hope that was in us, opportunities to share, to care, to listen, to encourage, to share a laugh, and to cry together. It's not just stumbling along aimlessly in life, being buffeted by circumstances. It's not being in a mad dash for what society offers and what society values, and ignoring and avoiding what's going on around us. It's not letting time just pass by. We are aware of our calling and the opportunities that come our way, and we're engaged in that walk along the way. We have in our minds at all times the fact that we, all of us, are God's family. We are ambassadors for Christ. We are God's representatives on this earth. And our thoughts and our actions to each other here, to those we interact with along the way, whether here or at the feast or when we return home, reflect that reality. McLaren's Expositories makes the following commentary on the phrase, redeeming the time. And so here, redeeming the time does not merely mean making the most of moments, but it means laying hold of and understanding the special significance of life as a whole and each succeeding instant of it as the season for some specific duty. It's not merely time, it is the time. Not merely the empty succession of beats of a pendulum, but these moralize, as it were, heightened and having significance because each is apprehended as having a special mission and affording an opportunity for a special work. In other words, redeeming the time means we understand the importance of the time we have been given. It is a gift, it's a limited opportunity, and we have to go through life with that in mind. We treasure the time we have been given. It is a valuable, yet limited resource. The New Living Translation renders Ephesians 5, 15 through 17 as follows. So be careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but like those who are wise. Make the most of every opportunity in these days. Don't act thoughtlessly, but understand what the Lord wants you to do. The second scripture that uses redeeming the time is found in Colossians 4, verse 5 through 6. Colossians 4, verses 5 through 6. Colossians 4, verses 5 through 6. It states in Colossians 4, verse 5, walk in wisdom towards those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how to answer each one. Verse 5 is similar to the wording of verse 15 of Ephesians 5 that we just read. It literally, once again, means buying up the time in the marketplace. Whereas Ephesians 5, verse 15 discussed walking carefully as we redeem the time, Colossians 4, verse 5 mentions that we are to walk in wisdom to those we interact with. Actually, these phrases introducing redeeming the time are similar to walk carefully or to walk with wisdom. Again, not just blindly stumbling along, not blazing through life at a frantic pace, not paying attention to what's going around us, but it's a thoughtful walk, knowing that our actions are being seen by others. A companion verse to this subject can be found in Galatians 6, verse 10, if we would turn there. Galatians 6, verse 10. Galatians 6, verse 10. Galatians 6, verse 10, it states, therefore, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. The word here for opportunity is, once again, the word kairos. Rather than translate time, it should be translated opportunity. In other words, we all have the time, as we have the opportunity, we are to do good to all. And though this message is not limited just to our time here at the feast, we have the opportunity to redeem the time with one another, members of God's family, to look out for one another, to engage in fellowship with others we have never met before, that no one feels alone. No one should feel alone among members of God's family. We also have the opportunity of redeeming the time by our example to those here at the resort, to those we have in common contact outside the resort. Doing good to God's family, doing good to all. This is how we redeem the time we've been given. And when we return home, we continue to redeem the time with those of our family, those of our friends, those of our coworkers, and those in society around us, our neighbors. Verse 6 of Colossians 4 also highlights the opportunity we have to use time with regard to our words. First, our words are to be gracious, to be courteous, to be respectful of the other person. Secondly, our words are to be seasoned with salt. Matthew Dunnigan commentary on the Bible with regard to be seasoned with salt says the following. Both in Greek and Latin authors, salt was used to express pungency and wittiness of speech. The applications would be, one, our speech is to be free from corrupt language or obscenity. Two, our speech is to have a wholesome influence rather than the type of language that is just one step away from sin. Three, when we talk about God, Jesus Christ, the church, our salvation, the Bible, etc., our speech should be attractive, winning, positive, uplifting, enthusiastic. Speech that is compelling, so much so that the hearer desires another taste. It is speech that is not hard to listen to. And number four, speech that gets the point across perfectly clear. As members of God's family, we are to redeem the time, to make the most out of the opportunity in how we use our words, like emails, texts. Our speech, when we interact with each other, is to be gracious, positive, uplifting. I once had a person I worked for give me a great adage one time, and I've tried to live to it to this day. Never send bad news in an email. Always do it in person. How often do we send emails that we regret? It would be better just to talk to the person. With that, we are to walk carefully and wisdom in doing good to all. In this message today, we have reviewed the concept of time, of redeeming the time we have been given in this life. The problem each of us face as we live in our society is not the amount of time we have, but it's our view of time and life itself, how we use the time we've been given. That's where the idea of redeeming the time comes in. Time is valuable. It's a valuable resource. We are to be constantly evaluating how we're using our time, redeeming our time. We have been given this as we go through our journey as members of God's family. And it's not just related to the big events in life, but the seemingly insignificant times. Maybe we redeem the time by giving a note of encouragement to someone, a kind word, a smile, maybe a tear. How are we redeeming the time? Redeeming the time is diligently buying our time from the marketplace of life, making the most of what we've been given. It's doing so with balance, and I cannot stress that enough. It's taking the time also to enjoy and appreciate the blessings we've been given. Redeeming the time includes the time to rest, the time to laugh, the time to enjoy, the time to break bread together, the time to celebrate. When we think about it, redeeming the time is integrally related to the concept of stewardship. When we think of stewardship, we generally think of finances and managing assets and managing resources. But in light of this and what we heard today, isn't time a valuable resource that's to be managed? When we think about redeeming the time, it tells us yes. Redeeming the time is managing the time we have been given to walk carefully, to walk with wisdom, to take every opportunity to use time in a way that promotes God in our lives. to demonstrate to others the hope that is with us. And we will find that focusing on redeeming the time will allow us to focus on what's truly important, our relationship with God, our relationship with family, our relationship with God's family, and relationship with others. And not to be caught up in a world that's fast-paced, lost, and without focus. We are to enjoy life and the many blessings that it gives, but that enjoyment is to be God-centric, which produces lasting results, results that last to eternity. There's a definition in Wikipedia with regard to stewardship that is poignant for our discussion of redeeming the time. Now, Wikipedia is not my usual source for information, but I thought this provided a pretty clear and compelling meaning of the word. A biblical worldview of stewardship can be consciously defined as utilizing and managing all resources God provides for the glory of God and the betterment of his creation. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. Indeed, redeeming the time is part of our stewardship. It could be viewed as taking the time to utilize time that God provides for the glory of God and for the betterment of his creation. The Feast of Tabernacles is a time when we look forward to what the world will be like under God's rule. We tend to consider God's plan, don't we? And our calling to be kings and priests during that time. It's forward-looking. It's encouraging. It's inspiring. But the Feast of Tabernacles is much more than that. It's a time to be introspective as well. When we evaluate the use of time in light of our calling, we have to ask ourselves during this feast, how are we redeeming the time that we have been given? How are we redeeming the time today, this week here at the feast? How are we going to redeem the time when we return home? What are we doing, going to do, to make each minute of our lives mean something? I would like to conclude with the following quote that I came upon when I prepared this message. And it's something to consider when considering the concept of redeeming the time. The quote is, "Each new day is God's gift to you. What you would do with it, or if I may interject, how we redeem the time is your gift to God."